Welcome to Thoughtful Money. I'm its founder and your host, Adam Taggart. Well, the first ever Thoughtful Money conference was held online this past weekend, and I'm delighted to say the event was a real success. That was primarily due to the amazing lineup of speakers who presented and took live audience Q&A throughout the insight-packed 9-hour day. For those of you who didn't attend, I thought you'd enjoy hearing some of the conference highlights. The day started with Lacey Hunt, former senior economist to the Federal Reserve, explaining how America's descent into negative net savings dramatically undermines our ability to deal with the economic challenges we face.
Now, however, with negative net national saving, we are at a more perilous state. It's an indication that the economy collectively is living beyond its means, and there is now a constraint on the production function.
Stephanie Pomboy then built on top of Lacey's forecast, explaining how the delayed lag effect of the Fed's tighter policies are finally arriving and threatening to throw the economy into a hard landing recession.
I still expect a hard landing. I am not in the soft to no landing camp at all. And the economic data that I look at really reinforces the idea that things are clearly decelerating, that the consumer that is the engine of U.S. economic activity is really stretched and, you know, reaching his limits. And that, you know, it doesn't seem like there's a lot that's going to come to ride into the rescue. I know fiscal stimulus has been very aggressive and supportive, and that looks like it's at least at the margin not adding what it was last year to the equation. And obviously on the monetary side, this pivot that everyone was pining for seems to be getting pushed farther and farther into the back half of the year. So the question really is, do rate cuts when they come arrive early enough to arrest what I think is an unfolding recession right now?
Stephanie was followed up by Michael Pinto, who added that asset prices are extremely vulnerable to a correction here, one that would only be made worse by a hard landing.
Well, stock market valuations, I believe, are on fantasy island. So the price to sales ratio is now 2.8. The median, the average of that figure is 1.5. My favorite metric is the total market cap of equities as a percentage of GDP. That is greater than it was headed into the Great Depression of 1929, the NASDAQ bubble, and the global financial crisis. So in 1929, it was 117% total market cap of equities as a percentage of GDP, 117%. In 2000, it was 142%. In 2007, it was 104%. Today is 185% of GDP. These numbers are off the charts. In my estimation, the stock market is 40% overvalued based on that metric alone.
Ted Oakley agreed with Pinto, explaining that those who think the current AI-driven run-up in the markets is different this time are likely repeating the same mistake seen in prior market bubbles.
So in the 70s, the late 70s, you couldn't give a stock away hardly. We're the reverse end of that right now. I've just got this graph last week that showed that over 55 years old people, anybody over 55, they have the most stock now they've ever had in the history of keeping records. And so they're all in the market right now, much like they were in 99, 2000. You couldn't sober people up then. I don't care what you said. They just said, nope, you missed it. It's the new paradigm and this whole thing's off, just like AI is now. And in the end, it didn't work out that way, but everybody thought it would. Cisco was the NVIDIA. What NVIDIA is today, Cisco was then. Mm-hmm. Of course, it had $82 a share in that first quarter of 2000 and went down about 90%.
Michael Leibowitz then gave an update on the bond market, noting the rising risks of a liquidity squeeze, which, if one indeed happens, would catch Wall Street by surprise.
I think it was Lori Logan from the Dallas Fed. I could be mistaken, but I think it was her. Just said, we don't know when there's ample is the word they use, ample liquidity, ample reserves. So it could be when it gets to $300 billion. It could be 2 months after it gets to zero. We don't know where it is. And a lot of it is just depends on the banks and their willingness to lend. their willingness to use reserves. If banks are unwilling to use their reserves, it doesn't matter that there are excess reserves in the system. There's no liquidity because banks provide the liquidity. So we're just starting to get to thinner ice. Doesn't mean the ice is going to break open immediately, but just be a little more careful.
And then Danielle DiMartino Booth explained how the Fed and the U.S. Treasury are increasingly working at odds against one another, which doesn't bode well for smooth policy execution.
Because he is taking it one day at a time and trying to buy as much time as he is. He is not Janet Yellen's sandbox BFF. Ain't happening. Does not want to help her in her mission. Does not like Donald Trump, does not like Joe Biden, and he wants to do as little as he can to appear political. He pivoted on December the 14th to get ahead of the Iowa caucuses. I stand by that.
Next, technical analyst Tom McClellan walked us through his latest charts showing that a recession and a new bear market look indeed due soon, but maybe not just quite yet.
Nothing's wrong with the indication from the yield curve, except for the misunderstanding of a lot of people of how it's supposed to work. That we were promised a recession and it hasn't shown up yet. Well, it wasn't supposed to. You got to wait for the 15-month lag time to go by.
So sorry to chime in here, Tom, but it sort of sounds like you're saying we are right now basically perched at the precipice.
Exactly right. And as Danielle DiMartino Booth was saying, we're starting to see the indications. If you look at layoff numbers and other indications and consumer credit, we're starting to see that it's going to get worse. And don't shoot the messenger for being the bearer of bad tidings. Okay. So what does that mean for the stock market? Well, there's trouble ahead, but not quite yet.
After that, dollar milkshake theory developer Brent Johnson gave his latest outlook for the U.S. dollar.
And I think it's possible, again, no for sure what will happen. I think it's possible and perhaps even likely that we get this imperial circle where the dollar strengthens alongside the capital flows coming into the United States as kind of a relative safe haven to the rest of the world trade. And so, you know, I think we're largely seeing that now. You know, assets continue to come into the United States. The United States markets continue to outperform the rest of the world. The dollar is, you know, 10% off its high from a year and a half ago, but it's still higher than it was at its highest point during COVID. So on a relative basis, the dollar has remained very strong. You know, U.S. asset prices have continued to perform pretty well. And, you know, I think we just kind of got to wait and see until the next shoe drops.
After Brent, housing analyst Melody Wright delivered her forecast for home prices over the coming year.
So I believe that we have sort of turned the corner. The path is very clear to me. Even if rates go down, we're going to get interest. This is the spring buying season. So people will be out there transacting. But what we can see is that a lot of the transactions are for the million plus homes, like higher price homes, not as much lower price homes. And I think that as that demand sort of peters out, plus the typical death, divorce, you know, the DOD default demand, we're going to have a pretty slow housing market this year. And I believe we're going to end the year down in prices between 4-5%.
Natural resource investor Rick Rule then explained why he's so bullish looking at the next few years and shared a number of the specific companies on his watch list.
Investors who invest in the sector, be it precious metals or natural resources generally, over a couple of decades probably go broke because performance is not equitably distributed. You have to be a stock picker in this business, and you also have to be a contrarian in this business. In capital-intensive cyclical businesses, the variability in share prices is extraordinary, which means that you have to buy subsectors when they're out of favor, and you have to have the discipline to remember to sell them when they come back into favor. But mercifully for me, several sectors that I feel are relatively attractive are on valuation metrics at lows that I have never seen exceeded in my career.
Building on Rick's enthusiasm for gold's prospects, Matt Pipenberg then gave his argument for why he expects the current breakout in the metal to continue much much higher from here?
The current rise in the gold price, again, you'd think we'd be super excited. We are. We're not surprised. In fact, looking at it just in terms of dollar terms, yes, it's at all-time highs in terms of U.S. dollar-denominated terms. But really, in terms of real terms or inflation-adjusted terms, the real high for gold was way back in 1980 when it was 850. Because at the inflation rate at that time, if you adjusted for inflation, you'd have a gold price of around 3,000. And we certainly see gold hitting 3,000 and then some.
Then, Mark Moss gave an overview of Bitcoin, focused on the investor who doesn't own any yet and is wondering if it's too late to get on the train.
Yeah, so the question always, Adam, I think, you know, you and I, we both speak at a lot of conferences, and a lot of times on panels, you hear people disagreeing up on stage. This guy saying bonds is good, this guy saying bonds is bad. And typically it comes down to time frame. This guy's thinking short time frame, this guy's thinking long. So we have to, that's always the first question I try to ask everybody, over what time frame? So when is it too late for Bitcoin, over what time frame? I think that Bitcoin gets to $43 million per Bitcoin in the next 60 to 80 years. So if you're looking that far out, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. But if I'm looking that far out, then it's certainly not too late. If my time frame is I want to sell it in the next 60 to 90 days, I mean, we might have a pullback and it might be too late, right?
The day then ended with an hour-long Ask Anything live Q&A session with Thoughtful Money's crew of endorsed financial advisors. All in all, the conference was over 9 hours long and delivered a wealth of actionable insights. But don't take my word for it. Here's feedback submitted at the end of the day by the conference attendees themselves. This day's been a boatload of insight. Many thanks. Great conference today. My brain is absolutely full. Wonderful day. Well worth my time. Wonderful information-packed conference today. And what a day. Thanks, Adam, and all the guest speakers. So if you're wishing you attended the conference, but for some reason didn't, don't worry. You can purchase the replay videos of the entire event, all of the presentations, and all of the Q&A sessions simply by going to thoughtfulmoney.com/conference. All right, and now that the conference is over, I'm gonna take my family on vacation this week and try to get a little rest. I will be making a few videos from the road though, including a reaction video with Axel Merck to this week's announcement by the Federal Reserve. Premium subscribers to my Substack will be able to participate in that discussion live late in the day on Wednesday. Everyone else will get the replay of it here on this channel on Thursday. See you all then, and thanks so much for watching.